listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's 12 noon. It's now time for All Souls Forum.
Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Welcome to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. Today's program features Angela Elam, and she is the host and producer of New Letters, the radio portion of New Letters. New Letters is a literary publication from the University of Missouri at Kansas City that has existed for quite a number of years. In 1977, they began doing a radio version of the New Letters magazine, or actually it's more of a quarterly publication. And Angela Elam is going to talk to us about New Letters on the radio. So let's have our usual introduction, then we'll have a talk from Angela, and we'll take our break, and we'll have the question and answer period as usual.
So anyway, again, I'm Carolyn McDonald. Welcome to the forum at All Souls. We have several forums that are coming up dealing with media-connected things. The one today, Angela Elam from New Letters on the Air is here. Now, all of us have Sunday morning rituals, and I remember once someone saying that they meditated before they came. My ritual normally had been that I walked, but I've not been able to walk right now. But another one that I have is I listen to New Letters on the Air, which is at 6 o'clock in the morning. Now, if I don't get up at 6 o'clock, there are archives and things are online, but I did hear it this morning. And so I thought, well, this is going to be something that's really good for a forum. And Angela will be in the position, instead of being the interviewer, of being the presenter and then answering questions. So it's kind of interesting to be able to turn the tables on her here. So I'm going to turn things over to Angela. She'll speak, and then, as usual, we'll have our collection and then Q&A.
Thank you, Carolyn. It's nice to see you out here on a gray, cold day, so I appreciate you coming out. And I want to give a shout-out to my husband, who willingly drove me over from Lawrence. I live in Lawrence and commute to Kansas City every day to work on the radio show, which is produced by New Letters Magazine, that is celebrating its 80th anniversary this year. So we're very grateful. New Letters, we're housed at that house right there on the website at the top of the hill on 51st and Rock Hill Road, not very far from the library at UMKC. In 1977, the radio show began, and it was started by David Ray, who was then the editor of New Letters Magazine, and his wife, Judy Ray. And they, along with Bob Stewart, who is now the editor of New Letters Magazine, and Rebecca Presson, they were the people who really got it going. And New Letters, in the beginning, was primarily recording readings and a lot less of the interviews. And then over the years, Rebecca Presson kind of took it in the direction of being more interview-focused, even though we still record poetry readings and still occasionally do readings. So the format, I guess I should ask first, how many people in the audience have actually heard New Letters on the Air? Oh, wow, good. Okay, so you already sort of have an idea. Oh, okay, great, super. You already have an idea then of what the show is, but we focus on creative writing, and it's fiction, poetry, essays, and plays primarily. And I always think of it as being a show that's about transformation, because what I'm getting at, and when I'm doing a lot of the interviews, is trying to see how these artists take what happens to them in life, or even what they view in life, and how they transform that into a work of art, whether it's a play or poetry or just their creative process and what makes them tick. And one of the things I've discovered over the years is that most writers, when you do the research on them and you start to read their work, you can see that they're often playing with one idea overwhelmingly. There's something that they, maybe a nut they haven't cracked in their lives, that they're always trying to get that open and get to the meat of it. And So it's really fun for me to try to suss that out when I'm talking with them. I've got our website up right now, and you at newletters.org, and part of this website, a big part of it, came from a grant that we got called Save America's Treasures Grant, and we worked with Marsound Archives to digitize our old shows that were on reel-to-reel tape and starting to disintegrate a little bit. So it's been a long process, and we're still, believe it or not, still loading some of these digital shows to our new website. But this is it. It's the first time our website has featured all the elements of New Letters. So we have a page for New Letters Magazine, a page for New Letters on the Air, and then we also have a press at the University of Missouri, Kansas City called Bookmark Press, and so it's up here as well. So if you haven't been to our website, I recommend that you go and explore. It's really a fun place to go. I'm going to pull up the page right now that's for New Letters on the Air. And you can see that right now we've got featured Edwige Dantica. Somebody asked me how we go about programming. Our show is broadcast here locally at 6 a.m. on KCUR, but we're also on different stations all across the United States and even in Germany. We have an English-speaking station in Germany that carries our show. We're in the Virgin Islands. We're in Hawaii. And they air us at all different times. It's totally up to the program director. So, for instance, you can hear us in San Francisco on Sunday afternoons at 3:30. So it's just going to be varied wherever they are. So when we're programming, we have to be thinking about our audience, not just as a Kansas City audience, but the audience out there. And so we have a variety of people that we're trying to capture, and we also are paying attention to things like Black History Month. February is Black History Month, so we'll have a nod to several people. That gives us a chance to, we will rerun shows occasionally because they fit into this pattern, as with Edwige Dantica, who is premiered right now on the page. Let's see. I thought that what I would do, and I'm not sure how this will translate for KKFI if they replay this, but I'm just going to play you just a little bit of the beginning of this, and then we can talk a little bit about our process of putting together a show. Edwige Dantica often writes about her native Haiti, which she still visits regularly with her Haitian-American husband and two daughters. A writer of fiction, memoir, poetry, and plays, she also collaborates on film documentaries and only occasionally regrets not pursuing medicine as her parents wished.
After the earthquake, I felt like I want to be able to do more than write about this. I want to be more than a witness. I want to change the situation. We need to also pose those questions to ourselves, writers, artists, not to oversell yourself on this idea that art can change everything, but that it can make some difference.
Listen to Edwige Dantica, who transforms what she witnesses into art, today on New Letters on the Air, a production of the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I'm Angela Elam, and I got to catch up with the writer while she was at the University of Kansas as part of the 2013 Hall Center for the Humanities lecture series. It had been 15 years since our initial conversation, and she's gathered more acclaim along the way, including the National Book Critics Circle Award for her gripping memoir, Brother, I'm Dying, and a MacArthur Foundation Genius Award in 2009 for her contributions to literature. We'll begin today with a short reading from her 2011 essay book, Create Dangerously, The Emigrant Artist at Work. Here's Edwige Dantica.
Create dangerously for people who read dangerously.
I'm going to pause it right there because if you're interested and you haven't heard this one, you can go online and listen to it. But I wanted to play the beginning of that because this really is one of those writers where we're trying to figure out how she has taken what has happened around her in art and transformed it. And we really deal with that a lot in this particular program. I also like it because it gives you an idea of how we go about scheduling our writers. Edwige was at KU, so I was able to interview her over there. We're really lucky that we have so many wonderful universities and colleges in this area, and I'm in touch with a lot of them, and we find out when writers are coming in, and that allows us to capture a lot of people while they're here, and we've gotten some great people along the way doing that. It can be really difficult because everybody is in their own little worlds, and you know, even though we're not doing them the kind of good that, say, being on Steve Kraske's show Up to Date would do, or say being on KKFI, where they appear on the show before their appearance in the area, and so it helps promote the actual appearance. We're a little different because we'll air, you know, much later probably, because we're not tied to the appearance in Kansas City at all. So it's a different thing, and they don't always think of us that way. So one of the things that we do research-wise, and it's a wonderful thing for you if you're not aware of it, on our page here, if you go up to, you can go to our calendar, which we have, you'd think, I'm a radio person, I would know to stay on mic. I apologize, I keep kind of going off. If you scroll down on this page, so right here we've got Kansas City Literary Events, and this is a service that we have always down in this corner. And it serves us as well as serving the community, because what it allows us to do is always have our antenna open to who's coming in. So it'll show the things that are coming up immediately, and it's quite involved. And so if you're ever wondering if there's a literary event going on that you would like to attend, we don't have every single writer that comes into town. We tend to focus on literary writers as opposed to nonfiction writers there's Bill Trowbridge. I think you guys know him. So he's going to be talking in March, but you get the idea. So this allows us to really find out who's coming in the area and then also share this with our local community as well. So we try to keep abreast with what's going on on the writing scene here locally so that we can get these great people. One of the things that is so interesting to me over the years, since the show's been going since 1977. In April, I guess it'll be the beginning. We started, oddly enough, long before there was ever a National Poetry Month. We started in April, which is now National Poetry Month. I think that's a wonderful birthday for us to have started. Just happenstance, as it may be. But we'll be starting our 37th year then. And one of the things that that's always been one of the goals of New Letters on the Air is to really have the writer reading their own works, because so often there's something about, even if the writer may not be the most dramatic person or even the best reader in the world, there's something that you can garner from hearing them read and what they decide to emphasize in the readings. You learn a lot from that. And so I think it's really something that we supply that for a long time you didn't even really hear on NPR that much. I've noticed that they've picked up having the writers read their works now when they interview them. They didn't used to do that as much as they do now. And speaking of NPR, I guess I should let you know that we are not technically an NPR show. That confuses people a lot of times. We're an independent production. And so we are distributed through the public radio satellite system, which is run by National Public Radio in Washington. So our show goes out on the satellite system that all the NPR shows go out on, that there's Public Radio International. Their shows are distributed that way, just all of the public radio shows out there. And there are so many shows, you would not believe it. We only hear a very small amount of the shows that are produced out there in Kansas City. There are tons of public radio shows. It's a very vibrant community of producers. We're also distributed through the Public Radio Exchange, which is something for independent producers that then station managers around the country can look through there and find things that they can fill in holes with. So it's great because we're out there on both of them, and we have some stations that regularly pick us up that way. We also distribute our works to some smaller community stations that may not have the money to join public radio. The PRSS system costs money. Content Depot costs money for stations to download. They have to be members. And PRX will charge some money, too. But we also supply our programs via email to some smaller stations. Like we have one out in Davis, California that's a real small, just within its town. So we try to be open to distributing that way, too. So I'm trying to think what else you might want to know about us. I had something. We produced something. Unfortunately, this isn't something that they air here locally. I don't know why that is. But we have... We produce promos every week, and I've got a very small team, believe it or not. We've got a small team. It's me. I have an assistant producer who is new this year. She started at the very beginning of 2013. She started out as my intern a few years ago, and she's been a wonderful addition. Actually, she's the only full-time person on the radio show. Because I also teach at UMKC. I teach in the Communication Studies Department. And so she's the one person in the... Oh, here we are. And then that's our team. And then this is one of our interns this year, the young man. And then Stephanie Hughes is my part-time person. And then this is Jamie Walsh, our new producer. You can see them if you go online to newletters.org as well. So it's a small team who's doing all this work because there's a lot of stuff tied to this now that we never had to deal with 15 years ago or even 10 years ago. We have a Facebook page we have to keep up. We have to tweet. We have to, put things on Tumblr, make sure that the stations get all the information that they want. We also produce weekly promos. This is where I was going a moment ago, where you don't hear them here at UMKC, but there are... Let me see if I can find this. Here I am. Here are just some promos from last year, just to give you an idea, too, maybe. Never mind. I guess it's just not meant for these promos to ever be heard in Kansas City. So, the other thing that if you aren't one of these people who wants to get up, I take it that you get up fairly early to be here on Sunday. So you're probably the audience who might be up at 6 a.m., but if you're not... We also have ways that you can listen online. You can obviously listen to the last couple of shows here on our website. But we also have, if you go over to our webpage and click on ways to listen, one of the things that we didn't get done, we want to have, this allows you to go to the podcast. And so you can sign up for our podcast for free right down here. And if you go there, it has like a bunch of shows from the last several weeks, and you can either stream them or just sign up and have it delivered to your, if you don't have an iPod, it can come to your, it can come to your computer. You can have it delivered there if you'd like to do that. And so I know that we have a large podcast audience out there, so we would love for you to join that if you feel like you can't get up early enough in the morning to listen to it. Let's see. There are one of the things that I love doing about this show, besides meeting, and somebody make sure you cut me off when I go, is I get to meet a lot of really wonderful writers along the way. And with my team, we do a lot of research before we actually do the interview. So people have asked me about the process. Usually if it's a writer that has written a whole lot of works, I always, as my method of process, try to read their most recent book, which is the one they really want to talk about, is the most recent one. And then if they're a writer of note, I'll try to go for their most famous one. I try to get at least two of their novels read if I'm doing a novelist. And then we have all this research that we do through our libraries. Thank God for libraries. And we go to Gale research sources, and where there's something called contemporary authors. And we're able to go on there, and not only does it have their bio, but it will give a brief description of all their novels they've written. And if you're dealing with somebody who's written a whole lot of novels, there's no way you can read all of those. But if you've read a couple of their novels and you've done your research, you start really honing in on what their themes are. You can kind of tell just in that brief thing. Some writers, like with poetry, because their volumes are so much smaller, unless it's somebody like Donald Hall who has a gazillion books, you know, you can sit down and read those. Poetry, people always think, oh, it's a skinny book, I can read through it really fast. Poetry is like, it's like eating a box of truffles. You know, you really can't do that very fast. I mean, it's something that's a lot denser and more difficult to, not difficult to absorb, but it takes a little while for it to come in that way. So there are varied ways, but I have this great team, and I always have what I call a cheat sheet in front of me. I meant to bring one of those so I could show you, and it just is a one-page sheet that gives their basic information, name of their wife, their children, the books they've published, the awards they've won. I like having that as a reference when I'm doing the interview so that I can glance down because, you know, I can forget things very easily. You know, what's his face or what's her face is one of my favorite phrases, so it's nice to have that sort of help when I'm doing the interview. Also, the interviews are not done the way you hear them. Most of the time I interview people for an hour, and then we have to whittle it down to our half hour space. And sometimes I really wish we had that entire hour, because there are some people, like when I interviewed E.L. Doctorow a few years ago, the whole hour just had this shape to it that was just really wonderful. And then I had to go and spoil it by cutting it, you know, down. And I never did. The one thing that I'm always trying to capture is for a show to have a beginning, middle, and end. And you can't just take the first half hour, and you can't just take the second half hour. And I'm trying to get a full conversation that touches on their themes within that time. So sometimes I begin with something they said at the end. And, you know, it's almost like writing a paper in some ways. You know, you get it all out there, and then you rearrange it in order that it will have a flow that feels like a show. And I think I get that. I have my MFA in playwriting. And I'm not putting words into their mouths. They do say these things that they say. But I think that working with dialogue and shaping a play really helped me kind of understand how to shape this sort of show. Because I see it as a show on top of it as being an interview. And so that's the real struggle. And to make it have that continuity so it doesn't feel all chopped up, that can be, you know, quite a feat sometimes. So that's sort of what we struggle with every week. And I've been asked what are the most difficult parts of doing the show. And I think the most difficult thing is the relentlessness of it. 52 weeks a year, you know, year after year after year. And even though we do reruns, when we do the reruns, we have to update them. We have to, you know, we can't be saying this is their most recent novel if they come up with something else. And they've usually done something and had all sorts of things happen. But, you know, you just got to keep chugging and chugging and chugging ahead. So that can be the difficult thing sometimes. But, you know, on the other hand, meeting all these great people is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful gift that I feel very honored to have that place to be able to share a conversation with some of these great people. And it becomes even more poignant when they pass away. You know, Mary Baraka died not too long ago, and I pulled out the interview we had with him. We had three different shows with him. Well, actually, two shows and one recording. And so I was able to pull pieces of it. I was going to do that with Sonia Sanchez for this week's show, but we had two snow days, and so it ended up being more of a real rerun rather than a composite of what she's done with the Black Arts Movement. Sometimes you just have to say, okay, you know, this is the way it's going to be. But those are some of the things that we struggle with. Right now, I feel very blessed that I have a wonderful team, and we have a lot of joy in our day-to-day process, even though we're constantly meeting deadlines and constantly, you know, wondering what's going to be on next. Like right now, I have all these men in the can, and by in the can, I mean I've already recorded and interviewed all these men, and I've always liked to kind of keep it even where we have women and then men and women, men, you know, a woman, a man, just to kind of really show. And last year at this time, I had all women. I mean, I don't know how this happens, but, you know, these are things I'm always thinking about. Are we going to have too many male voices on, or, you know, so, or too many female voices on, and then trying to hit the mark of Black History Month and just whatever we're doing. It's just an interesting process trying to juggle all that. And I think my time is up. We have a question and answer period. So if there's anything that you have a question about, you know, feel free to ask me. I would be more than happy to answer that. And then, Carolyn, do you take over from here? Thank you very much.
You're listening to Angela Elam talking about the New Letters radio show. And we owe you a break. You're listening to the All Souls Forum. Let's take one. And we'll be right back with the question and answers.
Support for KKFI provided by Peaceworks KC, a proud supporter of KKFI Community Radio. This is Jane Stover with Peaceworks KC, inviting you to join us for our annual meeting this Sunday, March 9th, 2 to 4 p.m. at Simpson House, 4509 Walnut. We'll celebrate our recent success in opposing drones and nuclear weapons and in support of whistleblower Chelsea Manning. Further info is at peaceworkskc.org.
Wednesday night is Arts Night on KKFI. At 6 p.m., it's Art Speak Radio, followed by the award-winning From Arc to Microchip at 6:30. Then it's Live Radio Theater on LA Theater Works from 7 to 9 p.m., followed by Chamber Music with Dr. Mike. Get your arts on Wednesday night on KKFI. On this week's Heartland Labor Forum, we profile the Mexican Electrical Workers Union with the top officer who recently came to Kansas City for a labor conference. Hear about Mexico's most combative and democratic union, the ESME, celebrating their 100th anniversary this year. That's Heartland Labor Forum, Thursday, 6 p.m., rebroadcast Friday, 5 a.m.
Listen to Radioactive next Thursday, March 6, 7 p.m., to hear Witness for Peace delegates Ted Glenn, Joan Langmack, and Corliss Jacobs talk about their recent trip to Oaxaca, Mexico, where small farmers and indigenous communities are struggling for survival against NAFTA, transnational corporations, and GMO corn. Thursday, March 6, 7 p.m. on Radioactive Magazine.
Hi there.
Hi there. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here.
I want to get your thoughts on the evolution of digital media and social media, and how you perceive the experience you have. And I want to maybe key on a couple things you said, just to keep it in your context. You talked about shaping, and hanging around a lot of people who do digital stuff, you hear the word curation, but I don't think that's what they mean. So I'm curious as to, because I believe that you described a process of curation, taking that hour. And then you also expressed what sounded like a little bit of annoyance about all the extra work of the social media maintenance. So I'm curious to know what your thoughts are about that going forward. Is it consistent with your effort, or perhaps a little orthogonal?
I don't know. I guess I did express. I think Facebook, I think social media is nice, but it is more work for us. And one of the things that I feel that it's changing the way people deal with media. They did an interesting study with NPR at one point, and they found that a lot of people would go to the site and just read. That's why you'll see longer articles where they'll take out pieces of what's there, and they'll just read it rather than listen to it. And I thought, oh, how strange, you know, where the social media is actually encouraging people to moving away from what it is we do in radio, which is trying to get people to listen. So I have very mixed feelings about what it does for us. Back in the day, I feel kind of like that now. Because at one time when I started working in radio, you know, in 1988, which it was so ephemeral. Nobody thought about saving anything. I mean, that's one of the things that's so remarkable about New Letters on the Air when I came here, is that they thought about archiving things. They thought about saving these programs. The radio station I worked at in Georgia, nobody thought about doing that. It was going out today. It was going out like it was. It was out there, and then it was gone. And you just didn't have that. So this idea of curating something that's going to be living on, because now everything will stay out there, you know, until we have to find some, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. So it's a real different thing now. It's a real different animal. I kind of miss that. And in some ways, it was more related to theater in the beginning for me because, you know, it's like a play. You do a play, you do it, it's over, you know, and you have the memories. And sometimes your memories are better than the actual thing, you know. So anyway, but I think social media, I do think a lot of people come on there and find out about things. I mean, I do think it opens up our world a lot more, but I don't think it makes people listen any better. Did I answer your question? I probably didn't. Okay.
Hello, and welcome to All Souls. I love your show, but I have to say I'm having a terrible problem because you don't look anything like the Angela Elam that exists in my head.
I've had that said before, actually.
My Angela Elam does not have such beautiful hair. I am very curious about the career path that brought you to UMKC and to hosting this show.
Oh, okay. Well, I started out in radio right after I got my MFA in playwriting at the University of Georgia. And I went to our public radio station there and talked to the station manager. I really was trying my hardest to convince them to do radio plays. And, you know, I really, having studied all these British playwrights, I wanted to write radio plays because that's how they hone their craft. You know, the BBC is still producing wonderful radio dramas. Unfortunately, for whatever reason in this country, we don't recognize that as the art form that it could be. I mean, it's so amazing. And you are so lucky because, right, they're going to have a festival here in Kansas City called Hear Now. Stay tuned for it. It'll be coming up. I want to say it's that third weekend in June. H-E-A-R, Hear Now. And there'll be people from all over the United States coming in with different kinds of radio dramas. And it's open to the public. So mark that down on your calendar to be looking for it. They're working with, I'm working on the advisory board as there's some people from the Art Institute, UMKC, just from all over the area. So you'll have a chance to hear some of the radio drama that unfortunately we don't get to hear on the air on KCUR very much. There are some stations who air it. So that's what took me to the radio station. And he looked at me and goes, radio drama? Nobody wants to hear that. But we started talking books. And he said, you know, I would like to really have a local literary show. And my undergraduate degree was English. And I said, well, you know, Women's History Month is coming up. At that time, it was kind of a new thing. I said, have you thought about doing a series on contemporary women writers? And he goes, well, what would you do? And we started talking about it. And he said, why don't you go write a proposal and then bring it back to me and we'll talk about it. So I went home and I wrote up this proposal of what I saw this weekly show being. And it was really focusing on women writers. At that time, you didn't hear as much. I mean, you know, they weren't published quite like they are now. And so anyway, I took it back to him, and he looked at it, and he said, well, let me put you together with a producer. And he slapped me in a room with a producer, and we started talking about it. And that was my first real radio show. And then the next thing I knew, he actually hired me for an air shift. My mother was a classical pianist, and so they played classical music during the day. And so I started doing that, and then I started working on their local magazine show. It was sort of like KC Currents is here. You know, it focused on local issues. And I was doing that. And I worked there for 5 years. And then I got a job. There was my then boss. This is an interesting thing, how money can drive you sometimes. He was telling me that the only way in public radio you can ever get raises, significant raises, is to move to different stations. That's how you have to do it. He had done this himself throughout his career, popped around. So he said, you've got to move. So not that he was trying to get me out of there, or maybe he was, I don't know. But so I got a job at KANU, which is now Kansas Public Radio, and worked there, but it wasn't really a good fit for me. And I was there just under 2 years, and this job came open. And I wasn't looking for it right at the time, but a friend saw it in the paper over in Lawrence. She saw it in the Kansas City Star, and she said, Angela, did you see this? And of course I didn't. And I read that what they wanted, and I thought, that's my job. My God, that is my job. Because they wanted somebody who knew something about literary things. While I was in Georgia, I worked with the Georgia Review, which is a very, very wonderful literary magazine. And all the folks at New Letters, of course, would know the Georgia Review. And I had had all this production that they needed. And it's rare that you have somebody who's that interested in literary things who also can actually cut tape, which we were physically cutting tape with razor blades back then, to produce things. And I got it, and I've been here 18 years March 5th, which is, I can't believe it's that long. But anyway, that was my career path. And I have not followed the one guy's advice and jumped around to different stations, so... Oh, well. But, you know, there are very few shows out there that are like New Letters on the Air. I mean, there aren't that many shows that are just focused on literature. It's very rare in that way. And we are the only city in the country who actually has a literary magazine, a literary radio show, and a small press under one roof. There's no place else like that in America. So, you know, we're really blessed to have that as well. So that's why I haven't jumped around, I think. That, and I married a man from Kansas. What can I say? So my husband back there is Z. Holland. Any other questions?
What's the best way to locate your program in other markets, in other cities?
Yeah, let's see. That's one thing that we haven't yet put on our new website, Ways to Listen, which we need to do. That would be the obvious thing to do, because there's not a good way to just find it all in one spot. There are a couple of locators called radio locators out there, but I went on one of them recently because we were just going to point people in that direction rather than having to list the time and all that kind of stuff, and they were really out of date. So is there a city you're interested in finding out?
Chicago.
Chicago. We're not in Chicago. And
really?
That's a damn shame.
That is really surprising.
Well, you know what? Chicago Public Radio is so active, and they produce so many things of their own. A lot of times, one of the things that we find is that if a station has their own local literary show, they don't necessarily want to carry another one,
right.
Which I think is a shame, because there's
certainly room for more than one.
Exactly.
Exactly. Okay.
Then maybe we can place some requests.
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Seriously,
okay.
You can. The place you want to get in touch with the station's program director. That's
right.
What you ask for.
Okay.
The program director, and they'll let you know.
Okay.
Occasionally, we get cherry picked by different stations. We've been carried in Chicago occasionally for specials. You know, they'll pull us for something that we have out there that, say, for Black History Month. I'm saying that because it is February, and we're in the middle of that right now. So stations will pull us for that reason.
Right.
Thank you. I've been trying, since I've got KKFI cornered right now, I've been trying to get them to carry our show at a different time of day, which would be really nice. Yes, sir.
I'd like you to pursue the dramatic shows on radio. I come up from a generation where radio, and I still have tapes and tapes and tapes of old radio shows. Is there any source in this country? I listen to books on tape. There are so many opportunities to listen. Are there any of the BBC shows and so on available so that we could listen to those dramas?
I think you can actually online go to BBC. If you'll go to the BBC online, there's a way that you can tune into their stations and you could hear it as it's streaming. Now, I don't know if they make their entire archive available or not. That's a really good question. You know, you need to come to the Here Now Festival here in June. That's definitely something, because you'd enjoy meeting some of these people and seeing them put together that. By the way, if any of you would like to get in touch with me, and if you'll, do you email? Okay. If you'll email me, I'll follow up and try to send you some links on that, because I've got some things that I've directed my students to go and listen to. And my email is simply my last name, elama@umkc.edu. And I'd be happy to get back to you. So, yeah, radio drama, I think, is a magical, magical thing. And unfortunately, a lot of people think of it as being cheesy, you know, it's science fiction. You'll hear some science fiction things, but it can be so incredibly wonderful. Like I said, some of the best British playwrights in the world cut their teeth on it, and when you hear what they have to say, it's pretty magical. Yes, Vanna.
Well, I have several questions, and I know I'm only supposed to ask one, so I'll start with this one. I know about the New Letters publication, and I know about New Letters on the Air. So how is it that you work together on that, or how do you access each other?
Oh, well, we get together every week for what we call Mind Meld. And so we get together, and the magazine staff talks about writers that they're publishing, who they're working on, what works they're reading right now. We talk about, you know, who's coming into town. We try to share information with Bookmark Press. Who are they looking at publishing? You know, we just talk about things that way. And another way, for instance, just this past week, Janice Harrington, a wonderful poet, you'll get to hear her on our show soon, came in for the Midwest Poets Series over at Rockhurst University, and Bob Stewart, the editor of New Letters Magazine, interviewed her for New Letters on the Air, but he's also going to publish the interview in the magazine. And that way, there are times where they can take the entire interview that we've done and use the whole interview in the magazine. So every once in a while you'll see interviews that are done for the radio show in the magazine. But mostly we just share information about writers that we've discovered, somebody new that they're publishing. Because New Letters Magazine is publishing only previously unpublished works, you know, new works by writers. So we try to, it's kind of interesting because sometimes people that they publish I'll interview. Sometimes I'll interview people who then, you know, submit work to the magazine and they get published in the magazine. So I think we feed each other that way. And that works with the press too, with Bookmark Press. Some of our really great interviews. In fact, right up here on the screen, you'll see Walter Bargan, who was Missouri's very first poet laureate. He's got a new book that came out at the end of 2013 from Bookmark Press. So it was really fun to interview him because, you know, not only
was he the Missouri poet? He's a very prolific. This is somebody you should get in here. He would love to come talk to you guys. He lives out in central Missouri, and I could see you getting him here if you wanted to. He'll be on here. So that's another way that we cross over. I try to do regional writers as well as national and international writers. I try to always at least showcase somebody who's from our area, if not once a month, close to once a month, you know, because we are here in the heartland, and I want people to know that a lot of really wonderful work comes out of this part of the world. And so, you know, that's one of our missions as well. Another one is to also focus on people who might not be necessarily celebrated in the whole world of media. They might be published by smaller presses, so they don't have the big machine of New York behind them with the large literary publishing houses. So, you know, we're also trying to balance it. We want some people who are super famous, you know, because we need to let people know that we're doing that as well. So it's always a juggling act, you know, trying to keep people that are going to be of national and international appeal, but also highlighting where we are too. So, and tell me when to shut up. So.
Oh, she will, believe me. This is just idle curiosity type things, but I was wondering if you had have any notable authors who were not so notable when they were on your show, and you got them early before they became famous, and who are they? And then who are some of the more illustrious artists that you've had on your show?
Well, let's see. Well, I've got Edwige right up in front of me. I interviewed her 15 years ago, and she had only had it right after her very first novel. So now she's won the MacArthur Genius Award. She's won a lot of the National Book Award. She's won a lot of awards since then. So she's somebody that, you know, it's easy to think of her because her face is looking at me right now on the website. But so that's somebody who is now in literary circles anyway. You know, I never know because my world is, to me, she's very famous. She might not be as famous to other people, but she has had a couple of bestsellers, so... literary authors are often not, you know, well, we've got an early interview with Richard Ford. There's someone that went on to win the Pulitzer Prize. He's won a lot of major awards. Have you read any of his books, the novelist Richard Ford? He wrote The Sports Writer. That's the one that picked up the Pulitzer Prize years ago. But we have an interview from him, with him back in 1988. Oh, this is one of the cool things we've been able to do with our new website, which we're still developing. We have a shop down here, and speaking of Richard Ford, there he is right there, where we're able to go in and we're putting together collections that have to do with certain writers that we've focused on over the years. So Richard Ford is one of them, because we have a show with him every decade for four decades. So that's exciting. I love that, going back and being able to, you know, hear what they've done. I interviewed Salman Rushdie, which is probably the most famous writer I've interviewed. But he was already super famous. Though he did thank me at the very end of it. He said, "I want to really thank you for this interview. You asked some questions that nobody's asked me, and thank you for not asking me about the fatwa." You know, so, which of course everybody comes back to over and over and over again. So, yes, ma'am.
Yes, I was wondering. I was trying to think how it would fit in with yours, but are you aware of World Book Day?
World Book Day. I have heard of it. When is it?
It's April the 23rd, and I'm going to be a part of that in that I give away books. But I've noticed that most of the books that they are featuring are novels of contemporary
genre writers.
I'm going to give away 20 books of Garrison Keillor. But I think are you aware of that day?
I've heard of it. I didn't have it in my. A lot of times in April, I'm really focused on poets because it's National Poetry Month, and so we do a series. But I'll look at it. You know, we've got coming up. Occasionally, we'll do things for 4 days like that, like National Library Day in September. We've done things, and we're doing one coming up in. Very soon, hang on a second, where is this thing? Where we're honoring United Nations Day, talking about, which is coming up in February. So we're doing a program called Understanding Others, Transformative Writers. And so we're doing bits and pieces from some of the shows from this previous year to... It's United Nations World Day of Social Justice. So we've pulled from some writers to put together a show like that. So occasionally we do thematic shows tied to that. But we're always having to think about these shows go out onto PRX and they sit there and stations can pull them down anytime. So they might not pull them down. We can't mention it too much in the show. We address kind of the issues, but without it being that day, because if they want to pull it down and play it on May 30th, you know, then it's going to be out of date. So I'm always having to think about that, too, where we don't mention. For instance, we put together this wonderful, what I call our Valentine's Day show with a husband and wife. They were both poets, Terrence. Oh, these are one of those moments. Anyway, I love this guy. He's a wonderful poet and his wife. And we put it together for Valentine's Day, but we didn't mention it in the show, but it had that feeling. But then that way stations could air it any time they wanted to. So that's another thing we have to think about. But thank you for bringing that to my attention. Those are the kind of things we'll sometimes play up in social media. You know, and we'll probably, now that you've said it, we'll give away some books because we've had some book giveaways through Facebook and through Twitter and things like that that are kind of fun. So that's a way where the timeliness of something can augment what we're doing in the production of this. So.
But we'll have this be the last
question.
Thank you. What are some of the qualities for which New Letters on the Air has won what awards?
Oh, okay. Well, this past year, 2013, we submitted to the Association for Women in Communications. It's a national competition of 5 different programs from the year before, and they took the entire program and listened to it, and we won for Best Interview Program. In the country, so we were very happy about that. Yes, thank you. It's called a Clarion Award, and so we were very happy to get that. We also entered their competition a couple of years before. We entered it the year before and didn't win anything, but you know that's how it goes sometimes. But a couple of years before, we won one for Women's Issues Radio because we had a show about women poets. And it really examined the history of women being published in America. And we had some local poets and also the woman who edited the book, who at that time lived in Arkansas, on the show. And we were able to go back to our archives because they put together this wonderful anthology called When She Named Fire, which we borrowed to use as the title of our show, When She Named Fire. And we had... in our archives, some of the poets' poems that are published in that book. So that was a real fun way to use our archive. And that show won first place that particular year. So those are some of the things that we've done just recently that we feel pretty good about. So
thank you.
You're listening to Angela Elam talking about the New Letters radio program. Right here on the All Souls Forum. This program was recorded on Sunday, February the 9th of 2014 at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Kansas City, Missouri. This program is produced weekly by Barry Lee, also edited by Barry Lee. Thank you to Rita Norton of All Souls and the staff at All Souls for their help each week in providing us the material for this program. Tune in again next week around noon here on KKFI for another All Souls Forum. You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Speaking at a local elementary school Tuesday, President Obama said the budget he just released is designed with future generations in mind.
This opportunity agenda is built on four parts. More good jobs at good wages, making sure that we're training workers with the skills they need to get those good jobs, guaranteeing every child access to a world-class education, and making sure that our economy is one in which hard work is rewarded.
The sweeping budget proposal also makes an economic argument for passing comprehensive immigration reform, citing data from the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office that doing so would reduce the national deficit by almost $1 trillion over the next two decades. It also advocates for saving money by creating alternatives to detention for low-risk undocumented immigrants arrested in the United States, many of whom are currently held in expensive private prisons for months awaiting trial. But the budget also allocates hundreds of millions of dollars for immigration enforcement mechanisms criticized by immigrant rights advocates, such as adding at least 4,000 new Border Patrol agents and expanding the controversial E-Verify employer database. But much of the controversy over the president's budget proposal has been aimed at the provisions shaking up the tax code. The president said Tuesday he wants to end some benefits for the nation's richest, such as the one that lets wealthy individuals call themselves a small business to avoid paying certain taxes, and extend others to the middle class and working poor.
Right now, our tax system provides benefits to wealthy individuals who save, even after they've amassed multi-million dollar retirement accounts. By closing that loophole, we can help create jobs and grow the economy and expand opportunity without adding a dime to the deficit.
The president's budget, especially the tax provisions, quickly came under fire from Republicans on Capitol Hill, including Arkansas Senator John Bozeman.
I don't think that's the answer. We need to do the things. We need to get some certainty in the economy, make it such that people are comfortable with hiring again. That'll help more than anything.
But Bozeman did not go as far as many of his colleagues, who are demanding deep cuts to the social safety net. He said it's important to preserve funding for food aid and other programs that keep families afloat.
As I go around and to my food banks and things like that, I understand we have a serious problem. And so, we just have to keep that in mind. It's so easy to look at these things and they appear to be numbers on a spreadsheet. But those lines on the spreadsheet represent families and individuals that really are in need.
This week, Republicans in the House of Representatives released a report criticizing federal anti-poverty programs like food banks, food stamps, housing subsidies, and others, claiming they're ineffective and trap people in poverty. Report author and former vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan has repeatedly called for cutting, restricting, or privatizing several major health care and welfare programs, and is expected to do so again in a budget coming out later this month. But many progressive members of Congress, including Michigan Democrat Sandy Levin, say Ryan's push to reduce spending on poverty would be damaging in the current economy. He said Congress's recent votes to cut food aid by billions of dollars and allow unemployment insurance to expire for 2 million people and counting are having visible effects in his home district.
I was at a pantry, it was now a month ago. I had been there 6 months before. The shelves were half empty this time. And I walked in and saw those shelves and I said, "What happened?" And they said, "The need has been so overpowering."
As the Obama administration prepares for a budget battle over the next few months with Republicans in Congress, he may also face pushback from his own party. In today's document, he said his past proposal to cut the cost of living adjustments for seniors who depend on Social Security remains on the table. Many Democrats are staunchly opposed to that idea and have instead introduced a bill to increase Social Security payments by raising taxes on the wealthy. In Washington, I'm Alice Olstein.
Funding for KKFI provided by...
The Topeka Performing Arts Center presents the Pat Metheny Unity Group, March 8th, for 2.5 hours. Over the years, he has performed with artists as diverse as Steve Reich, to Ornette Coleman, to Herbie Hancock, to David Bowie. Winner of 20 Grammy Awards, including Best Rock Instrumental and Best Contemporary Jazz Recording. From the opening to an encore of Pat Metheny Classics, Saturday, March 8th at the Topeka Performing Arts Center. Tickets are available at the TPAC box office, Ticketmaster.com, or by calling 1-800-745-3000.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for Jazz in the Afternoon with Jeff Harshbarger.